Mr. O'Sullivan, Reel 22. Right, Mr. O'Sullivan, it's kind of mid-1944 now, and we're talking about the invasion at Normandy. And could you just talk about how you actually heard about that and the circumstances of it?
Well, on this particular day, I was working with Otto Norman. Tree trunk for the same tree with cross cut sails. Georgie Gent with one line and with another. A civil German civilian. He was an older German civilian. He was maybe in his early 50s. And while we were working these cross cut sails, somehow he got his thumb cut. So he stops having tending to his thumb. And while we're tending to his thumb, we just wish that they had landed, they had invaded. And we didn't say anything else because Otto was there. He was in this little group. And I went back to Sarenwood and he indicated that he wanted to have a word with him. So I went to Costa and he said, they had invaded. He said, who's invaded? The Americans. And then Otto saw he was talking about something. He was talking, and Otto came across to tell us all about as much as he said. So that night, that afternoon, anyway, I went back to the Rats Care to start preparing the evening meal. I said to Mrs. Price, well, I didn't say anything to her to start. We got preparing dinner and that sort of thing. I said, come on, the wife. She said, oh, yeah, of course, yeah, at the wireless. Well, the wireless was always on the German, there was only one German station anyway. The wireless was on, and we were working there, and I was always going to have some excuse to get into there, and we got on the wireless, and fiddling about with it, trying to find British radio, and then she said, and she came in, and she said, what are you doing? And I said, trying to get British radio. And she said, no, I mustn't. You mustn't. Anyway, I said that I'd been told that the American forces had invaded France. So eventually she said she helped me to find the BBC. And I listened to them. And it was true. We'd invaded, the Americans invaded Normandy. And they'd made a successful landing. But it was, So when I got to the lab at night, I was telling the lads that they'd been invading in France. And after that, it was just a matter of listening to the British radio whenever we could. Everybody would. Anybody who could, apparently his dad could. I didn't know that.
That was Tom Tunney, yeah.
And Benny would obviously, wouldn't he? Benny Lewis. But I listened to it. I could listen to it if I was in the house with any one of them. Clara was very easy going. She was the youngest of the two guys, and me and her going on moving well. She was a redhead, and she liked me. And she was like, and Emily wanted to listen. Emily was a bit more of a German. You know what I mean? She was more inclined to believe the Germans would win the war. But any one of them let me listen to it, but I couldn't listen to it if there was two of them in the room. Because there was frightened that one of them would say something, you know, which they shouldn't have said. You know, that they would talk about something that the German radio or the German newspaper hadn't shown. So I could only listen to it if there was one of them in the room.
So the sisters were suspicious of each other?
Well, they were frightened of each other. They were frightened that one would say something, you know, what they shouldn't have said.
And what about Mrs. Price? And
Mrs. Price would only let me listen to it if she was on her own.
Not with one of the daughters?
Because Ina didn't know that Chowder was letting me listen to the radio. Mrs. Price didn't let me know that either of two daughters was letting me listen to the radio. They were sort of frightened that they would give themselves away, or just, when I was on the phone with him, I could listen to it. But I could only listen to the news. I mean, I couldn't listen to British dance bands, all like that.
So how long would you listen to it when you listen to it?
Oh, maybe for the first 3 or 4 minutes of the news. We always made sure that I always made sure that I was in the rat's cellar for 6 o'clock.
And that would be every day?
Yeah.
And would you only, what station would you listen to?
BBC.
And I think you mentioned off the tape why that was.
Well, it was easy to, the first time I found the BBC, it was something like an old Philips radio. And the German station was set up. And I just nicked the edge of the dial thing, the outside, where to put the German station, so that the English station was online. And it took me, just twiddle the knob and it was there. And if anybody heard the door open, because the rat's cellar itself was here, but the living room was the furthest point away from the door, from the entrance. So if you heard anybody coming in, you could always flick back to the German radio, and it was never on very loud.
Right, Mr. O'Sullivan, the radio. So it was never on very loud. Were you ever almost caught listening to it by anybody?
Because there was ample time, and you could always hear them come into the rat's cellar because it was a big, heavy door. So you could always hear them coming in, because as I said, the radio was never very loud. If it was a daughter coming in, or Mrs. Price coming in, you could still hear them. And you had time to flick it back to, because you knew to move it, you knew where to move it. It was, a control thing, you knew what to do to move it back.
Were you aware that there were other stations, other allied stations that you could...
Well, no, I only ever tried to get one.
And you own it was always the, it was in English.
BBC,
in English.
Yeah.
And what effects on the German civilians that you knew and your guard? What effect did this news of the invasion have?
Well, I think they were really beginning to realise that Germany wasn't really winning war. There was a lot of apprehension on their part then, same as the apprehension that we had when we were first captured, what was going to happen to us. And they were terrified of the Russians, and they were terrified of Negro Americans. Mrs. Price told me she'd never seen a Negro on them film, and she thought that would be terrible. They didn't like the Russians, they were frightened of the Russians. No, and they'd never met any Russians either at that point, at that time of the night. But they did all the us about the Russian front and how terrible it was.
What about the Russian POWs in the village? How did they? Were you able to communicate with them about?
No, but we didn't.
You didn't try to talk to them?
No, we didn't try to tell them about it. We never told anybody else about
what you'd heard on the radio.
No.
What about in the lager itself? You were coming back with this news. Apparently some of the other prisoners had access to radio. I mean, how many of you do you think had access to radios with the civilians?
More than we thought, actually.
So more than just you and Tom Tony and a couple of others?
Well said.
And so you were quite well informed from this point on?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we never thought, well, sorry, we never even thought about using British radio before we did the Bingham invasion.
Was that you sensed that they would let you after this point, that they would be interested?
Yeah, they was as interested as we were, as how it was going.
Now, you've mentioned Mrs. Price's fear of the Russians and of black American troops. Were you aware of the German propaganda effort directed at their own people?
Oh, yeah, they were telling them that we weren't losing that badly, they weren't. They never admitted they was losing. They would never come onto German soil. That was their propaganda, that the American forces would never get into Germany itself.
Now, I think you off the tape you talked about German newspapers and how they managed to...
They talked exactly the same way. That they give the same propaganda out as the wireless was giving out. the German, and then they always talked in the way Italian, the American troops. It was never the British forces that never coming to. It was the Americans was the main enemy. And, you know, I mean, the talks were always about the Americans.
What was the morale in the hut like when you heard about it?
Very good. Then, anyway, you just say how long it been. So, because this happened in June, wasn't it? And it was, so we'd be home for Christmas then.
Did you think you'd be home for Christmas?
Yeah, we did.
And did
we
you?
We thought Germany would pack in. We never thought Germany would let itself be destroyed, same as it did. I mean, the bombing raid was terrific.
At this point, you were aware of
never,
it?
Never.
How did the Germans that you knew, what was their reaction to the bomb? I mean, obviously, you weren't being bombed in Bad Schmiedeburg, but they must have known, they must have had friends and relatives that were being bombed.
Yeah, there was a lot of Mrs. Price's relatives lived in Halle. And she was, actually, some of them came to stop with Mrs. Price, Mrs. Price's parents came to stop with them. Because they lived out in that way, and they couldn't stop there. Because it was safer. I mean, same as how people was, oh really, weren't they? They moved to safe areas if they weren't. You see, and they were both elderly people, well, those old people, what we thought, so they had no particular job to do.
Now, I think also off the tip, you mentioned the news of the plot against Hitler and hearing about that. Could you describe that?
I was working at the bathhouse that morning, and about dinner time, 12 o'clock time, 1 o'clock time, just before I went to work, it'd be 4 12, just before I went to work at the Ratska. So I was going to Ratska in the afternoon. The tall bloke at the bathhouse, I don't know what to call him.
German or British?
He was German. He was in control of the bathhouse. And he came running up the work steps, it was a slope. He came running up the slope, and he didn't come to tell the POWs, he came to tell the rest of the German workers. Hitler had been assassinated. And S was in Germany, he was something command then. But he was in charge of the world, he was happy, didn't he?
Did he say, was he shocked, or was he happy, or was he...
He was happy. He was relieved. And then the next morning, they said the assassination attempt had failed. And there was all these reprisals against the German generals.
And what was their mood then?
I'm sorry. Most of the German people would have been pleased to see the end of it at that time, because Germany was being knocked to pieces, wasn't it?
And did you listen to the news on the British radio that day?
I listened to it, but yeah.
And what was there?
Our British news said there'd been an assassination attempt by the generals on Adolf Hitler.
But they knew he was alive. Mm-hmm. And again, off the tip, I think this is like moving back a little bit, back into your earlier period in Germany. But you mentioned prisoners that were ill were allowed to, that they had to be treated at Wittenberg. Could you describe your memories of that and your memories of like the larger picture of Germany that you managed to see?
I was treated at Wittenberg. And there was somebody else treated at Wittenberg. I forget, it could have been Will Smith, I don't know. But the only time we could go to Wittenberg was on a Friday. It had to be a Friday. If you had toothache and it ran on a Monday, then you'd still have to go on a Friday. And the postman would take us to Wittenberg, and the people, the manager at the brickworks, were responsible for them POWs, and everybody who was responsible for the POWs while the postman was away. So we went to this dentist. He was a German dentist.
Could you just describe the journey?
Well, we just went on the train from Wittenberg, from Schmiedeburg to Wittenberg. We went down onto railway platform, got in the train, got in the compartment. There was two prisoners of war and a German Prussian sat at one side, and there was three women sat on the other side in the carriage. And we just went on it, and we just looked out the windows and saw the women talk to the postman, and they talked to us through the postman. They didn't talk directly to us.
And what questions were they asking?
Where does it come from? How old is that one then? Wanted to know if anyone were married.
Were they
all general questions. But they didn't talk to us direct. Now they may have done if the postman had been there. But they talked through the postman.
And this was
the
first guard that you had. And when you were out on the street with the guard, you know, in Bad Schmiedeberg and in Wittenberg, what was your impression of the German civilians, particularly in Wittenberg, this larger place?
Well, they were just the same as any, you know, they were just the same as any other place. The majority of them were women. There was either women or very young people, very young boys. But I mean, the youngest boy you saw on the street would be a schoolboy, because most of the young men were in the youth.
And you got to Wittenberg?
Got to Wittenberg, and they took us to the dentist. And we had an appointment just the same as the civilians had an appointment. They didn't say you'll have to wait while I finish with these. Our appointment was for 11 o'clock. The two of us were the same appointment, 11 o'clock. And I went in to see him, and he looked at my teeth, and he, one was bad and was giving me trouble, and he drilled it and filled it without any anaesthetic whatsoever, and I never felt a thing. Whether it was because the bloody tooth was hurting that much, but and I never had any bother with that tooth. But when I came back to England, in the army at Beaconsfield, out when I had a medical, they took that filling out and refilled it. And I had trouble with it ever after.
Was he a German dentist?
A German dentist.
Now, I think also off the tape you mentioned that your fellow prisoner was interested
whoever it was with me, it could have been Ray Smith, but I wouldn't be sure. It could have been Johnny Ireland. But whoever it was interested in the Martin Luther religion, more so the church, because Martin Luther Church is in Wittenberg. So the postman said, well, we had to wait for the at 4 o'clock train. I don't know what time the train was, but we had time to spare. With no food, we couldn't go into a cafe because we hadn't any money either, and the postman didn't have money to. So we went to have a look at this church, and we went into this Martin Luther Church, and we walked all the way around it. And whoever it was, I don't know which prisoner it was, when it could have been Ireland or Smith, but it was somebody who was, and he really enjoyed himself. And I mean, to me, it was just another church.
Now, also off the tip, you mentioned that when you were going to go out into the wider world kind of thing, that you would make special efforts with your clothing. Could you describe that?
This is the only time that Davey was ever useful. He had one or two shirts with a collar attached. He'd taken the lap of his shirt and made a collar to one or two of his shirts. And we used to borrow his shirts and ties, he made ties as well, and we would comb and tie them. And we'd have the best battle dress in the camp, your boots would be clean, and you'd look fairly smart to go to. But the clothes didn't belong to, most of the clothes belonged to Davy.
So you were putting on a show for the German civilians?
Yes, yeah.
Did you ever get any reaction from the Germans?
No, they just. As I said, they didn't talk to us. They were still friends, especially strangers to us. Now, in Schmiedeberg, they would speak directly to you, even if the person was there. But when we got to Wittenberg, they talked through the person, asking, they'd ask questions about us, but never speak to us directly. So as I went in to see the dentist could speak English. But most of the conversation was directed between him and the postman, because while all the time I was in the dentist's chair, My mother, Audrey Welsh, was sat in the same room with the postman. There was, I think it was because we was away from the camp, away from Smedeberg, that he sort of kept us all together, the two of us together and him as well in the same room, even when the thief was being drilled. Because I wouldn't do anesthetics or anything like that. I could hear what they were saying, but I couldn't say anything because, you know, he's operating on my mouth.
Now, just related to that, you mentioned off the tape an incident where you overheard an argument between some Germans. Could you just go describe that in detail?
Well, I was, as I say, very often in Smedeberg, I was on my own. Nobody bothered me. But I was going to work this particular day, and it was warm, and the windows was open, and I had two people arguing in German. And man and wife, it was. And she said something about Hitler, and the man said, "Bugger Hitler." Just like, it was just a spontaneous response, you know, you're talking with a rubbish bugger sort of thing. But when, and the police station, the police constable sergeant, whatever it was, his office was just above the rats cellar. You have to go into the rats cellar building, turn left up the stairs, and that was to the police office. And straightforward was the Ratskell itself. And I've been in there about, an hour or so working, and all of a sudden I heard a bit of a commotion. And the police sergeant, or police officer, was ringing this local, who had a devilish remark about Hitler, who was under arrest. Somebody else had overheard him, and told the policeman. And that was what they was afraid of. They was afraid that somebody would tell them that, and that's when I used to listen to the radio. The three women were frightened that somebody would say something that they shouldn't have known, and it would get back to the policeman.
I think you might didn't you mention off the tape also that you got to know the policeman quite well?
Well, I did. Yeah.
Mm. Could you talk about that?
Well, he was just an ordinary country policeman. And really, when he got talking to him, especially after the invasion, I think he knew at the bottom of us that he was getting information from somewhere, but he didn't know where. And he was as keen to find out what was really happening as it really happened. But he was just like a country bobby. He was a little stout bloke. But when we first went into Smedeberg, the burgomaster, the assistant burgomaster and the policeman were the three people who mattered. They was in charge. But towards the end, when the invasion started, the burgomaster was still a Nazi, as was the assistant burgomaster. But the policeman was more liberal.
Did the attitude of the burgomaster change?
Yeah, he was still a Nazi, still a bully.
Did that so the business of walking on the pavement and that stayed right till the end of the war?
Right, just leaving Smedeberg.
Right, now we're talking about Smedeberg. And again, you mentioned a story about the first guard that you had and his attitude to English and so on. Could you just...
I spent a lot of time with him, especially when I was first there, because he used to take me to work. Sometimes I stopped behind in the lager to clean up, and then he would take me to work at 10 o'clock. And I was walking down towards Smedeberg one morning, and he said, "Patrick, what isn't us fucking?" "What? Fucking?" He said, "Everybody say, shut the fucking door, pass the fucking salt. It's fucking cold." So I said, you shouldn't say..." He was trying to learn English. I said, "You shouldn't learn things like that." I said, "It's fresh. It means a man and a woman." And I said, "It's just bad language that we use." He said, "Germans don't use bad language. He didn't say Germans don't eat in that respect. He intimated that the Germans had no flesh weight in that respect. Swineland or Dunkirk, that was their worst word. And they really couldn't understand why we used it. And when I went back to the lager that night, I just mentioned what it said going down. And if one would listen to each other, when we listen to the conversation, we use that word every other word, and we didn't hear it. You know what I mean? It never registered with us. It was just force of habit.
So he was trying to learn English.
He was trying to learn English. He had a little English, German English book. Where he got from, I don't know. But he couldn't find this word in it at all. So he asked me what it was. Because we use it so often.
And was his English?
No, he was never any good. He was trying. But I mean, he was trying to learn English from the Scotsman, from an Irishman, from a Welshman. Different dialects. I mean, Tom Tunney's dialect was terrible. To him, he couldn't understand your dad the same as he could understand Benny Lewis or Dickie Dunn. They spoke, he could understand them, but he couldn't understand you because your dad spoke quicker than they, you know.
Could you understand each other when you first got there?
There was no difficulty in that way. I mean, Tom Tunney's used words that we didn't use. You know, expressions and then that's it. But we all did. We all used different expressions to each other.
Now, I think also you mentioned that there's a little bit of mischief going on in terms of you would teach rude words to the Germans. Yeah, could you describe that?
Well, when we were first building the bunker, the air raid shelter, it was going to be a vegetable cell according to them. We were working on it and there was some of the school wasn't far away from where this cellar was being built. And when they were leaving school at night, particularly in the first few months of us being in Sweden, they used to come and talk to us and take the mickey sort of thing, you know.
What would they say to you?
Because they kidded us on that they were going to win the war, they thought they were. So there was Georgie Gent. He said, do they teach you English yet? At the school, yes. And they used to teach you English. We could hear them teaching English. He said, well, go home and tell your father he's a square-headed bastard. What? What bastard? What's the bastard? You tell your dad, he'll tell you, you know. And tell your mother to rub it in the fucking air. What? You tell your dad. And of course, the dads weren't there. His mother was with him most of the time. And they taught him a lot of English expression. And they could swear as well.
Now, you mentioned Georgie Gent and he was a Cockney and so on.
He was a Cockney and he was a... For an old fact, he was a married man, with Georgie. But he was a very good... He was very good company. He had a really good sense of humour. And he and Benny Lewis and Tom Tunney, there was a free comedian. Tom Tunney had a good sense of humour when he got going, but by God he took some going. And if he was in a bad mood, it lasted bloody days. Did you find that? Yeah, I know what I'm telling you. Well, we once had an experience. We had an inside toilet. It was just a big drum, which one night somebody had used it for other business, and the smell was terrible. So one of the blokes said, well, light a piece of paper and drop it in. He said, it'll take all the smell away. I don't know what did Jack, he said. It will, he said. So he gets out of bed. It was at night time because he was passing in. And little bit of newspaper and dropped it into the barrel and I don't know how it works. They said, didn't you know, but human gas will burn. Yeah, it won't. It will. So three of them demonstrated it. There was two of them was trying to pass wind while the other one had a large bit of paper behind them. And it did actually work. Only one of them managed to catch the beast in his wind, but it was just a flash of light from it. It actually burnt. I was amazed. I've never seen it burn before or since. But ever after that, if anybody used the toilet inside toilet for toilet, they had to light a bit of paper and drop into